Dooku had had his own difficult relationship with the prophecies, believing in them, then casting them aside, then taking them up once more during Qui-Gon's time as his Padawan. Surely he would understand why Qui-Gon believed in this vision so firmly. Maybe he could even help find the words that would convince the others to listen. But from Sereno he received only silence. The door to the bedroom chimed, signaling a visitor. He braced himself. Enter! When Obi-Wan walked in, Qui-Gon exhaled in relief. Although he was a strong-willed man who had faced down warlords and crime bosses without flinching, he preferred to delay another round with Rael Averroes. The history that had led to Qui-Gon receiving this mission was now making the mission even more fraught. He asked, "Has the royal retinue calmed down yet?" "Not even close." Obi-Wan walked past Qui-Gon farther into the bedroom than he'd ever come before. He picked up the smooth, opalescent pebble Qui-Gon had collected from the cave yesterday.
"You're always gathering bits and pieces of everywhere we've been."
"I like to remember."
"You like remembering nearly dying in a sinkhole and getting caught between two sets of blaster-wielding outlaws?"
"Memory is, in the end, all we truly possess."
Qui-Gon took a seat in one of the tall-backed, carved chairs in the room. He suspected this would take a while.
"You're not here to discuss my habit of taking souvenirs."
"You're right," Obi-Wan said. "I'm here to ask you what in the world you think you're doing."
"Listening to the Force. Heeding the vision it has sent me."
Obi-Wan's expression darkened.
"Forgive me, Qui-Gon, but it seems terribly convenient that this vision aligns perfectly with your opinion about the Governance Treaty. Are you sure that you're not just seeing what you want to see?"
He didn't understand. Maybe nobody who hadn't had a vision of the future could comprehend how powerful it was, how persuasive, how true.
"My vision may agree with my opinion, but neither one influenced the other. My objections are real. So is this vision sent through the Force."
"But we talked about this on Coruscant."
Obi-Wan paced along the wall of windows, which looked out onto the cliffs at the shore.
"You said yourself the mystics' visions of the future shouldn't be taken literally, that they were merely interpretations of their current circumstances projected upon the future. Isn't that precisely what you're doing here?"
Qui-Gon felt as though he'd said those words half a lifetime ago.
"Obi-Wan, I was wrong. A true vision of the future is more than a simple dream or a figment of the imagination. It's the simultaneous perception of two points in time, beyond anything my mind or yours had previously encountered. So it's no surprise that I didn't understand it before, and that you don't now."
"So now you believe that she who was born to darkness will give birth to darkness?"
Obi-Wan asked.
"That a chosen one will come and restore balance to the Force? Are you going to take every single one of these hazy, mystical prophecies literally from now on?"
It took Qui-Gon a moment to admit it, not to Obi-Wan, but to himself.
"Yes, I think I have to. Now that I stand where the prophets have stood, I must listen to them in humility, not in judgment. When I was younger, I was capable of that. I only hope I can find the strength to believe again."
Some Jedi would have begun to listen at this point, but not Obi-Wan Kenobi. His apprentice's thinking remained as rule-bound as ever.
"Wanting to see the future, to predict it, and change our behaviors accordingly, that's a kind of control we're not meant to have, Qui-Gon. You're reaching for a power that others cannot have. That path can lead to darkness."
"I'm not turning to the dark side," Qui-Gon snapped. "Not every disagreement with Jedi orthodoxy turns you into a Sith Lord overnight."
"I didn't mean that,"
Obi-Wan sighed.
"If you won't listen to me about the visions, will you at least listen to me about our mission? Our mandate on Pygel comes straight from Chancellor Kaj herself, and she was very clear. We're here to protect Princess Fanry and witness the treaty, so the hyperspace corridor can be opened. If we have to push for the treaty to be amended and made fair, then that's what we will do. But you can't refuse to sign on behalf of the Republic. You don't have the authority to make that choice.
His apprentice wasn't wrong. But when facts collided with ideals, Qui-Gon preferred to change the facts.
I may have the authority to sign a treaty that condemns people to servitude and slavery, he said. But that doesn't mean I have the right to do so.
So you're turning your back on Avros and Fanry instead of working to convince them? Obi-Wan said. We can still succeed on this mission and do what's fair for the people of Pygel. If you persist in quoting mysticism and refusing to compromise, however...
I will persist, Qui-Gon replied. Rael Avros is beyond listening to reason. His dedication to protecting Fanry has turned into a mania. We'll get nowhere with him. Fanry is a child who must look up to Rael as something like a father. If he won't budge, I doubt she will either. This is not a matter for negotiation, Obi-Wan. It is a matter of principle, and we must stand firm.
Obi-Wan lifted his chin.
Yes, as a matter of principle. The principle being that we as Jedi must not go beyond our mandate, that we must work within that mandate to do what is right.
That was the second time in the past half-day that Qui-Gon had been lectured about the limits of the Jedi Mandate. His conscience twinged him slightly. It was important for Jedi not to become arrogant, not to impose their wishes and values on all others around them. But this situation was different. It had to be because the only thing Qui-Gon knew to be absolutely true was that his vision was real. He said,
In this case, my Padawan, we cannot both work within our mandate and do what is right. I've chosen the latter.
Obi-Wan walked toward the door, obviously outdone.
At the beginning of my apprenticeship, I couldn't understand you, he said. Unfortunately, that's just as true here at the end.
Only yesterday they had worked together as never before. How did Qui-Gon manage to get closer to Obi-Wan at the same time he was moving further away? Just before Obi-Wan would leave the room, Qui-Gon said,
Once you asked me about the basic lightsaber cadences, why I'd kept you there instead of training you in more advanced forms of combat.
Obi-Wan turned reluctantly to face him again.
I suppose you thought I wasn't ready for more. The same way I'm not ready to believe in all this mystical, that's not why.
After a long pause, Obi-Wan came to the point where he would listen.
Then why, Qui-Gon?
Because many Padawans, and full Jedi Knights for that matter, forget that the most basic technique is the most important technique. The purest. The most likely to protect you in battle and the foundation of all knowledge that is to come,
Qui-Gon said.
Most apprentices want to rush ahead to styles of fighting that are flashier or more esoteric. Most masters let them because we must all find our preferred form eventually. But I wanted you to be grounded in your technique. I wanted you to understand the basic cadences so well that they would become instinct, so that you would be almost untouchable. Above all, I wanted to give you the training you needed to accomplish anything you set your mind to later on.
Obi-Wan remained quiet for so long that Qui-Gon wondered if he were too angry to really hear any of what he'd said, but finally his Padawan nodded.
Thank you, Qui-Gon. I appreciate that.
But what?
You could have said so,
Obi-Wan replied, and then he left. The lump in Obi-Wan's throat wouldn't go away for several minutes, no matter how many times he swallowed or how hard he tried to turn his mind to other things.
He was trying to help me this whole time, he thought. Qui-Gon cared about me more than I knew. He does even now.
Knowing this soothed something deep in Obi-Wan's soul, an ache and an uncertainty that had dwelled within him for many years. He wondered how much of his apprenticeship would look different to him when he re-examined his memories through this new perspective. But none of that came any closer to resolving the problems on Pygel. Only one solution came to mind. It was a major violation of protocol beyond the proper boundaries of any Padawan. Obi-Wan rejected it for that reason alone, but when every other idea he had failed, this came to him again. This time, he couldn't shake it. There are rules for what Padawans can do and what masters can do, he told himself. If I do this, I will break almost all of those rules. After a few hours of consideration, however, Obi-Wan knew he had no choice. It was time to go over Qui-Gon's head. He went back to the palace library, which was still completely empty, and activated one of the comm terminals. When its screen lit up, an artificial voice said,
State location and identity of recipient.
Coruscant, the Jedi Temple. Obi-Wan took a deep breath. The message is for the Jedi Council.
Chapter 28.
It wasn't as though Obi-Wan had never spoken to the Jedi Council before, but he'd never done so alone, without Qui-Gon beside him, and had never had anything to say that would shock the Council so much.
Qui-Gon's gone rogue before,
Sazy Tin said,
but he's never deviated from his mandate so greatly or in such a serious matter.
Pauly DePatian shook his head, disbelief apparent even through the hologram.
Of course, the treaty must somehow be changed to protect the people of Pygel. But disrupting the entire diplomatic process is dangerous, especially when multiple armed forces threaten the rule of law on Pygel and its moon.
Nearly the entire council was arrayed via holo in a circle around Obi-Wan. Full projection was best for a meeting of the seriousness he knew, but it felt eerily as though he were in the council chamber itself. Only the occasional flicker revealed the palace library around him. He gathered his courage.
I would argue that Zerka's undue influence on this planet, and on Avaros in particular, already threatens the rule of law. But I fear my master's extreme stance makes change less likely, not more. There's no room for negotiation between them.
The council members exchanged troubled glances. Eeth Koth said,
We cannot allow this to stand. Both Jyn and Avaros should be recalled immediately.
Obi-Wan didn't like saying this, but he had to.
Avaros has been the de facto ruler of this planet for nearly a decade. He and the Crown Princess appear to be inseparable. If he's pulled off planet just before the ceremony, the public mood could turn ugly, possibly winning converts to both the opposition and the Blackguards, whoever they may be. I also suspect that any power vacuum would quickly be filled by Zerka. They're entrenched here.
What a mess,
said Koth, his irritation evident.
I fear, Master Yoda, that the rest of us should have listened to you. Inviting Qui-Gon Jinn to the council
has been done.
Yoda said.
Undone, it shall not be.
Yoda voted against my master.
Obi-Wan felt the rejection as sharply as though he had been the one found wanting, not Qui-Gon Jinn. The divide between them had somehow made Obi-Wan treasure his master more, not less. It was as though he'd had to stand farther back before he could see the man clearly. But seeing Qui-Gon clearly had not helped Obi-Wan get through to him.
So sure are all of you that Qui-Gon is wrong to put faith in his vision?
Yoda drew himself upright.
Certain you are that the Force does not speak to him?
The silence that followed went on for what seemed like a long time. Doubtfully, Depa Balaba said,
"The future is always in motion. We cannot put our entire faith in such visions."
"No, we cannot. Qui-Gon errs in this. Yet also, an error it is to say that such visions cannot have meaning."
Yoda turned to make eye contact with every council member present in turn, then finally Obi-Wan.
"What evidence is there that Qui-Gon's dream may see true?"
Obi-Wan admitted, "In the dream, Qui-Gon envisioned the entire celestial chalice, the chamber for the coronation and treaty signing, in great detail. When he saw the chalice for himself, it was identical to his vision in every sense."
Pauly Depatian cocked his head, apparently impressed. He wasn't the only council member who reacted that way, but others remained skeptical.
"Jin may well have seen a hollow or picture long ago,"
Koth insisted.
"The place may look the same as his dream, but that has no bearing over whether events will unfold as he says, and it's a rather disjointed version of events at that."
"Besides,"
added Sacy Tin,
"seeking to know the future is a path to the dark side."
Obi-Wan had said the same, but it sounded harsher coming from Tin. Yoda harumphed.
"Seeking to know, yes. But seek this vision Qui-Gon did not. Came to him unbidden it did. Such visions may be false, but not darkness in themselves."
"Can anything that leads to such temptation to control the future be said to be free of darkness?"
Tin said. Depatian nodded sagely.
"We cannot evaluate the tactical implications of these visions without also considering the ethical implications."
"Are they truly going to waste time debating theoretical ethics instead of dealing with the crisis at hand?"
The thought shocked Obi-Wan. Such criticism of the Council was something he would have expected from his master, but had never really confronted in himself. Maybe Qui-Gon had a point about the Council's tendency to bicker rather than lead.
"Don't be childish," Obi-Wan told himself. "They're the Council. Of course they consider all aspects of every situation."
And at any other time, he might have found this discussion interesting. Now, however, it was a distraction from the critical questions he needed the Council to answer.
"Masters, please, I'm to return to the moon with Qui-Gon later today to monitor Zerg activity and hopefully find and identify the Blackguards."
The summons from his master had come up on Obi-Wan's datapad as he briefed the Council. Guilt had weighed heavily on him ever since.
"What are you going to do?"
"The question this is not,"
Yoda said.
"Determine we will what you will do, young Padawan."
After a long, mostly silent trip with Obi-Wan to the rendezvous point, Qui-Gon was grateful to see the Merricks landing nearby. Even Pax Merrifer's attitude would be a welcome break from the awkwardness between him and his apprentice.
"So," Pax called from the ship's hatch, "ready to endanger our lives again today?"
"Looking forward to it," Qui-Gon replied.
Pax raised an eyebrow, but simply gestured for them to get in for takeoff.
"Okay," Rahara Wick said once they were in space again. "We got the coordinates you sent, but we haven't done recon yet. After that blow-up yesterday, we wanted some Jedi along for the ride before we got anywhere near people who are potentially armed."
"Understandable."
Qui-Gon leaned farther into the Merrick's cockpit to study her readouts.
"We're headed to a Zerka mine. Not one of their larger operations, but it's close to areas the Blackguards have attacked before. So whatever Zerka's doing there seems to be of interest to the people we're trying to find."
Pax folded his arms as he leaned against the wall.
"Why are you only turning your attention to this now?"
Obi-Wan spoke up.
because before it was difficult to detect meaningful patterns. But we've learned which acts were the work of the opposition and which were the work of the blackguards. Once we went through the record with that knowledge, the patterns became clearer. This place is important to the blackguards. That makes it important to us.
Well put, Padawan. Qui-Gon meant the praise sincerely. Why did it make Obi-Wan flinch?
Soon they were descending into the moon's atmosphere. Sooty haze on the horizon signaled the Zerka facility. At Qui-Gon's signal, Rahara brought the Merricks down. Finding a landing spot proved tricky on this rockier, more uneven terrain, but she managed to settle the ship at the very border of scanner range. At this distance, only specifically targeted scans would pick up much. Rax and Rahara would be able to monitor the Jedi as they scouted out the Zerka facility, but Zerka was unlikely to detect the Merricks. Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan set out on foot, lightsabers in hand and blasters at their side. Anyone who wore one of those unusual shields today would be much less protected than before. They moved as quietly as possible, bending branches aside and slowly releasing them, placing their feet on grass or soft leaves instead of dead ones. The silence between them was not awkward but necessary, and they were united again by a shared purpose.
"We'll get through this mission well enough," Qui-Gon noted.
It had occurred to him that his invitation to the Council might not survive his defiance of the mission mandate on Pygel. If so, would Obi-Wan continue as his Padawan? The rest of their time on Pygel would provide the answer. The smell of smoke signaled that they were coming close. Both Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon drew their cloaks around them and pulled up their hoods as a sort of camouflage. Obi-Wan, who held the scanner, motioned for Qui-Gon to take a closer look.
"The ores they're mining don't appear to be particularly rare or precious."
"No,"
Qui-Gon agreed, double-checking the mineralogy readouts.
"Zarka's not mining here because it's necessary. Just because it's possible. This is interesting, though."
He pointed to unusual spikes in the graphs from an area near one edge of the Zerka facility compound.
"Kyber,
no?
Of course. It's colon crystals."
Thoughtfully, Obi-Wan tapped one finger on the edge of the scanner. If Zerka's actually looking for colon crystals, Qui-Gon completed the thought.
They may be behind the blackguards after all. This may be how they gather the crystals to power those mysterious shields.
"We don't even know the shields use colon,"
Obi-Wan said, contradicting not Qui-Gon, but his own train of thought. Nodding, Qui-Gon answered,
"Nor are we entirely certain our lightsabers are ineffective against these things. One battle can't be absolute proof."
"We ought to make sure of that, though I don't think it will be fun finding out."
A grin lit up Obi-Wan's face just for a moment.
"Let's see if we can find out what they're doing with the colon crystals."
Qui-Gon motioned for Obi-Wan to follow him. Together they kept moving until they were almost at the perimeter of the compound. Only brief bluish sparks of light revealed the electronic fence that marked the boundary.
"Good," Qui-Gon thought. "This way we can see everything."
At first glimpse, nothing about this facility looked any different from countless other mining operations Qui-Gon had seen over the years. Sifter droids mindlessly went through raw material, separating ore from dross, which was picked up by loader droids lumbering along the ground, taking the ore for initial processing. Enslaved humans were present too in their gray coveralls, doing maintenance on droids. More were probably inside, performing the more complex tasks that simple worker droids weren't programmed to handle. It was dull, grueling labor. Another example of the arduous work they were forced to perform throughout the galaxy.
"There has to be some end to this," Qui-Gon thought.
"Yoda's correct. The Jedi cannot assume the authority for putting a stop to slavery throughout the galaxy, not without taking on more power than we should ever have. But somehow, this must change."
Their scanner blinked faster as they moved quietly through the trees, approaching the area with the colon crystals.
"Here, Master," Obi-Wan whispered.
it should be coming into view now.
A new area of the compound became visible. The Jedi stopped and stared at it for the several moments it took to believe it, until an ASP-7 clunked toward the uneven area, an enormous metal container balanced on its arms. The ASP-7 emptied the container, shook it once for good measure, then began carrying it back to be filled again.
"The trash," Obi-Wan said in disbelief. "Zerka's throwing the colon crystals into the trash?"
Qui-Gon might not have believed it either, if he hadn't glimpsed a few telltale orange glints amid the rubble.
"Apparently they're mining for the other minerals we've detected, and the colon crystals are merely debris. Well, that tells us one of two things.
We know Zerka isn't behind the Black Guards," Obi-Wan said. "If they were, they'd need the colon crystals."
"That, or the colon crystals aren't used in the Black Guard shielding after all."
Qui-Gon straightened.
"Either way, I doubt we have much more to learn by searching this facility. There's nothing special about Zerka's operation, and we're not getting anywhere near the Black Guards."
The electric sizzle of a blaster bolt startled them. The Jedi both looked up just in time to see one of the mining droids explode. Alarms began to wail. Red lights blinked on the corner of each facility. Worker droids dropped their tasks, wheeling around to provide what meager defense they could. Qui-Gon scanned the horizon and saw three small troop movers hovering just over the tree line, approaching the compound. The troop movers were descending, coming into land just within the fence. He knew who it would be before the first soldier appeared, and surely Obi-Wan knew too. But when that figure jumped out, blaster in hand, Qui-Gon still had to say it. "The Black Guards. They're here."
Chapter 29.
The boredom of sitting around waiting for the Jedi ended abruptly, with telltale signals blinking their way into sensor range. Pax took a look at them, sized up the situation, and thought, "Oh, bloody hell." "Scanner blocking field up," he said. "At our first convenience, we're getting out of here." Rahara came in, a Haroon bun in her hand.
"Wait, what about the Jedi?"
"Qui-Gon had the decency to say we shouldn't put ourselves in mortal danger on their account. We are not currently in mortal danger, but it's rather too close for comfort."
Would he have to do a full reading analysis to convince her? Then a simpler solution came to mind, and he pointed through the cockpit viewport toward the flying shapes near the horizon.
"There!"
She gasped.
"Whose ships are those?"
"I've no idea, and it doesn't matter anyway. The ship's weapons are powered up, and they're flying in attack formation. That's all I need to know to assess the likelihood of the aforementioned mortal danger, which is extremely high."
Distant blaster fire showed as little more than greenish streaks of light above the trees. Pax preferred the fire to come no closer. Rahara murmured,
"Whoever they are, they're attacking the Zerka facility."
"People after your own heart," he said. "Let's leave them to it, shall we?"
He hoped she'd return to the cockpit beside him and take the helm. Pax was a perfectly adequate pilot, but he lacked Rahara's magic touch. They stood a far better chance of getting away from here without being noticed if she was in the pilot seat. Besides, she'd been back in the mess, snacking for some time now, and he was in the mood for more companionship and entertainment. He had previously been instructed that it was not acceptable to interrupt her eating, sleeping, refresher time, or a holovids for this reason alone. The crisis gave him the perfect excuse. But she was already shaking her head no.
"It's not just Zerka scum in the facility," she said. "The people they've enslaved are there too. They'll get cut down before anyone's able to touch the inner rooms where their owners are."
Rahara straightened.
"I can't let that happen."
"Although I shudder to ask," Pax said, "how do you propose to stop it?"
"By taking the facet in to provide some cover." Rahara grabbed a helmet from the rack and headed toward the hold. This was unacceptable on many levels. Pax hurried after her, calling, "You won't be able to do much good in the facet. Each one of those ships is 5 times larger and has 10 times the firepower. Roughly. Exact figures can be calculated if you need convincing."
"I don't need exact figures. I need to get down there."
With that, Rahara pushed a panel on the wall. The plating on part of the floor retracted, providing access to the launch bay below. There, gleaming like a silver dart, lay the facet. Pax had felt so clever when he'd purchased a single pilot fighter. If the Merricks were ever attacked, then he had the ability to strike back, while keeping his valuable cargo out of harm's way. But he'd always pictured himself going into the fight, not Rahara.
"Get us off the ground," she said. "I'll take it from there."
It was tempting to refuse. Even a pilot as skilled as Rahara Wick couldn't manage to launch a fighter within half a meter of the ground. Refusing to take off, however, would only start an argument. Pax already knew how that argument would end. He might as well help her do as much good as she could. "Rahara!" he called as she took her seat.
"Wear your gloves."
She grinned up at him for the split second before the facet's mirrored cockpit slid shut. Obi-Wan's brief hopes that they could stay out of the fight vanished when several blackguards pivoted and began running directly toward them.
"They've spotted us."
"So it would seem."
Qui-Gon ignited his lightsaber, and Obi-Wan did the same. The electric hum of it was almost soothing. A reminder that, whoever his opponents were, he was a Jedi. One of the blackguards fired in their direction, but not at them, Obi-Wan realized. Instead, the bolt hit one of the fence control posts. For a moment, the electronic fence glowed so brightly, it was as opaque as any stone wall. Then it vanished, and there was nothing between the Jedi and the blackguards but some mining droids and 20 meters of mud. Qui-Gon ran forward, taking point. With his free hand, he grabbed a blaster dropped by a blackguard and fired at another, but the shot impacted on his opponent's shield, causing no damage. Obi-Wan swore to himself. Why did the shields have to guard against conventional weapons too? Qui-Gon's defensive moves were perfectly executed, but their enemies remained untouchable. That meant all the blackguards had to do was bide their time and wait for one small mistake by the Jedi. Obi-Wan ducked behind an ASP-7, taking cover. He expected Qui-Gon to do the same, but instead, his master kept fighting. His robe and hair spun with every move he made, and when Obi-Wan glimpsed his face, he saw only serenity. Complete calm. "I am one with the Force," Obi-Wan thought, recalling an old saying of the Guardians of the Wills. "The Force is with me." He relaxed and let the Force flow through him. Usually in battle, the Force seemed to fall silent. Not to desert him, but to become no more than instinct. This time, however, Obi-Wan found himself connecting to everything around him, as though he were in a meditative trance. He wasn't waiting for his master to guide him. At last, he was guided purely by the Force. The next few minutes seemed to take place in slow motion. Obi-Wan felt no fear as he emerged from behind the loader droid and re-engaged the blackguards. Life and death were all the same within the Force. There was nothing to hide from, nothing to distract him. Instead, he could perceive the path of every blaster bolt before it was fired. His body required no help from his conscious mind to angle his lightsaber to deflect each shot. Qui-Gon had always encouraged him to enter a meditative trance during combat. Obi-Wan had always thought that absurd, if not impossible. But now, at last, he fought as his master had taught him.
Rahara kept the facet so low that it skimmed some of the treetops. She'd feel the thud dip to one side or the other, momentarily lose some speed, but it was nothing her ship couldn't handle.
"I'm not sorry we never had to use the facet as an actual fighter before," she thought, "but I'm glad we've got it now."
All the attacking ships had landed by this time, so there was nothing to worry about in the air. Once Rahara had cleared the facility perimeter, she could see what was happening on the ground. On this side of the main building, the two Jedi Knights were up against at least a dozen fighters, and from the looks of it, were holding their own. They moved so fluidly, their lightsabers so brilliant, that she could almost have believed they were dancers. Rahara felt a shiver of awe. She'd always heard about the Jedi using their powers, but she'd never witnessed it before. The facet flew over the nearest building, revealing another slice of the compound and the battle. It showed her what she'd come here for. Alongside this building, a processing unit, a dozen or so Zerka workers had huddled beneath an overhang, attempting to shield themselves from blaster fire. The attackers, whom Rahara figured had to be blackguards, weren't firing at these poor people directly, only at the building itself. But if the building blew, all the enslaved would be killed as surely as if they were inside. There was a door only a meter away from them. Rahara remembered the old protocols, knew that the Zerka personnel had already taken shelter and locked all the entrances because everyone who mattered was safe. Slaves didn't matter. Someday she'd get her shot at Zerka proper. For now, she could only help those Zerka had abandoned. Rahara took the facet in low, almost ground level, flying between the enslaved people and the blackguards. Blaster fire pummeled the hull, but these were personal firearms, not the more powerful cannons ships used. The bolts barely scarred the surface and didn't even slow her down. As soon as she was done, she swooped back again, closer to the blackguards. Her reward was seeing them skitter backward to escape being physically run down. She banked around for a third sweep of the area. By now, the enslaved workers had dashed away from the Zerka building and were hurrying into a mineral silo, more than strong enough to hold up to blaster fire. Should she keep buzzing the blackguards? Probably not. Then she'd be helping Zerka, not the people Zerka had enslaved. So Rahara took the facet higher to get another look around. Dots on the distant horizon drew their attention.
"Wait. Those are approaching ships,"
out loud Rahara muttered.
"Who the hell is that?"
Green-white light exploded all around her, surrounding the facet, which dipped dangerously to one side. She fought for control, but the ship was no longer responding well. Apparently, at least one of the blackguards had a surface-to-air weapon, which had just been used to take her out. Rahara could do nothing besides pull up hard to try to break the force of the crash that was coming.
"Don't look now!" Obi-Wan called over the din of battle. "But I think we have reinforcements!"
Qui-Gon looked toward the horizon and saw approaching ships, troop ships, not unlike those of the blackguards, but each of them proudly showing the royal colors of green and white. Despite Rael's protests, Fanry's guard had come to back them up. The blackguards didn't seem to have planned for this contingency. Several of them lowered their weapons and looked around in apparent confusion. But some others had already broken and run for their ships. A full retreat seemed likely. Then the sound of crashing metal echoed through the camp. Qui-Gon wheeled around to see a small ship, a single pilot fighter, sending up plumes of mud as it skidded to a stop along the ground. That must be the fighter from the Merricks, he thought. Although Qui-Gon hadn't seen the fighter before, Pax had already taken the opportunity to brag about it. Whoever was in the cockpit of that ship was in serious danger of capture or death. Whether it was Pax or Rahara, they were only there because Qui-Gon had insisted. which meant it was his responsibility to get them out alive if he could.
Chapter 30.
Obi-Wan saw his master running toward the downed fighter and understood instinctively that he was to hold his ground against the blackguards until they retreated. The pilot's rescue would be up to Qui-Gon. Or so he thought, until weathered droidicas began rolling up from chutes within the ground. Zerka's defense had finally kicked in. Several of the droidicas headed for the blackguards, but two aimed themselves directly at Qui-Gon. The wave of surprise and fear that went through the blackguards told Obi-Wan they were about to run. That let them ignore them completely and run toward Qui-Gon. Calling upon the Force allowed him to jump farther and higher than he ever had before, at least 5 meters, somersaulting in midair to land in defensive position slightly in front of his master. Qui-Gon shouted, "What do you think you're doing?" Obi-Wan's only answer was deflecting droidica fire. These blasts could be blocked by their lightsabers, but the droidicas could shoot 5 times faster than any human, and were at least 10 times harder to stop. The entire compound had sprung into action at the same time as the battle droids. Some Zerka higher up, huddling in one of the buildings, must have belatedly signaled for an evacuation. Although Obi-Wan remained focused on the battle droids, he could perceive more of the scene around them. Blockish automated craft emerging from concrete shafts, doors opening to Zerka workers hustling in all their property, droids and equipment, and people.
Ow!
Rahara popped the pilot's harness in the facet so she could brace herself. Her ship had skidded to a halt on the edge of a ditch, tilting it sharply to one side. With one arm under her, she could prop up to see what was going on. The cockpit was half covered with mud. Through the smears, she glimpsed droids moving in set patterns toward autopiloted hauler craft. Rahara recognized the evacuation protocol immediately. She'd gone through a handful of these when a mine shaft threatened to blow and damage equipment.
Okay, Zerka's leaving.
Rahara felt relieved, then guilty for feeling that way when just a few meters from her ship, enslaved people were being loaded onto haulers. But she knew the evacuation procedure well enough to understand that there was nothing she could do unarmed with a ship that would need some repair before it could fly again.
I wonder, she thought, if some of them are people I know.
Tears filled her eyes as Rahara envisioned some of their faces. The fellow slaves who'd been kind to a small child sold away from her parents comforted her as best they could. A security droid rolled up to the facet, blocking Rahara's view of anything else but mud. Through the cockpit, she could hear its tinny voice.
Scanning.
Rahara froze. It felt as though the back of her left hand were burning, like the tag she'd cut out long ago were trying to signal Zerka on its own. She looked down at her midnight blue gloves and repeated to herself,
"You're safe. You're safe."
The security droid projected a beam of green light into the cockpit, momentarily blinding her. She was still blinking when it pried off the cockpit, exposing her.
"Initial scan inconclusive,"
it said as the beam swept over Rahara one more time. Its long, multi-jointed arms unfolded with its next words.
"Confirmed via facial recognition. Zerka property."
"No!" Rahara clambered from the cockpit, ignoring the ache in her crash-bruised chest, scrambling to get away. The Jedi were around here somewhere. If she could only reach them, they'd help her. But the security droid's clamp seized her, knocking the breath from Rahara's lungs as it snatched her into its grip. Her feet dangled several centimeters above the ground, so she couldn't get any traction to push away. A miniature pincer clicked out from a panel to snatch off the left-hand glove. A needle jabbed the back of her hand, piercing the skin, and she cried out in pain.
"Temporary tag in place."
Rahara had been prepared to die in deep space, To go to jail as a jewel thief? To run afoul of the huts? To get shot down by blackguards? She'd accepted all the dangers her life contained, except one. The only one she had begged the Force to spare her was a return to slavery. So much for the Force, she thought numbly, as the security droid dropped her in a hauler with the rest of Zerka's stuff. The palace troop ships were coming closer as the Jedi Knights fought against two droidicas at the perimeter of the compound. Ozone from blasters filled the air, a strange counterpoint to the organic smells of conifers and mud. A haze covered the ground, smoke, puddles evaporating from the heat of blaster bolts, ore dust, hampering visibility, as though they were fighting their way through a swirling fog that came up to their knees. Qui-Gon wasn't fazed. All he and Obi-Wan had to do was stall for a little more time. Then they'd have extra firepower on their side, and defeating the droidicas would be easy. But as he observed Obi-Wan in action, fighting as brilliantly as any full Jedi Knight, Qui-Gon decided extra firepower might not be necessary.
Obi-Wan!
He called.
Triangulate!
His apprentice lit up, for once understanding Qui-Gon completely. The two of them moved closer together, almost back to back. Under his breath, still furiously defending them with his lightsaber, Obi-Wan murmured,
Say when?
Qui-Gon had a near miss of a bolt that jolted his lightsaber in his hands, but he recovered immediately. He watched the two droids pivot, each toward the Jedi it had locked onto as its main target.
No!
Together they jumped more than 2 meters sideways to the exact midpoint between the droidicas and then ducked to the ground. Blaster bolts flashed over their heads, fired by each droid straight at each other. Crackling blue electricity raced along their plating as each vibrated, then collapsed. Obi-Wan half turned to smile at him.
That's more like it. Come on.
Qui-Gon hadn't forgotten that the facet had gone down a few minutes before. The heavy swirling fog around their feet became more opaque by the second, and he wanted to search before the murk became impenetrable. Airspace above the Zerka facility had turned into a three-dimensional traffic jam worthy of Coruscant. Blackguard ships were attempting to escape in one direction, pursued by palace vessels. Zerka cargo haulers were taking off in another, and a few remaining royal ships had been descending through the middle of it all. Qui-Gon hoped the palace troops were getting detailed scans of the Blackguard vessels. Then perhaps they could be traced, and the mystery of their origins could be solved. His boots trudged through mud as they walked farther back into the compound, into the area where Qui-Gon had seen the facet go down. Neither Pax nor Rahara showed themselves. He quickened his steps. The pilot might be injured.
The other droids have all headed to Zerka haulers, Obi-Wan said. We're safe.
For the moment, at least.
Qui-Gon looked sideways at his apprentice. Obi-Wan had a few tiny flecks of mud in his face mixed in with his freckles, and he'd torn the hood of his robe. Never had Qui-Gon seen him so elated.
You fought splendidly.
I know! Oh, I mean, thank you, Master.
Qui-Gon chuckled.
Go ahead, Padawan. Claim it. You've earned the right.
Obi-Wan ducked his head, trying to be modest, though the broad grin across his face told another story.
Always before, when you talked about achieving trance state during battle, I thought it impossible. But today I reached it. I felt the presence of the Force as never before.
Meditate upon that tonight,
Qui-Gon said.
Remember the feelings that guided you. The more you accomplish that state during battle, the easier it will be in the future, until it becomes second nature and... Oh no.
A strong breeze had stirred the soupy fog, revealing a patch of bare ground, including the facet, slightly damaged, lying alongside a shallow ditch. The cockpit had been popped open. No one was inside. Obi-Wan's smile faded.
What's this?
the fighter from the Merricks,
Qui-Gon said.
Either Pax or Ahara came here to help, but neither is in the ship.
Which means they're injured or... Obi-Wan half turned and called,
Rahara! Can you hear me? It's Obi-Wan Kenobi! You're safe! Just let us know where you are!
Nobody answered. At first, Qui-Gon thought to chide Obi-Wan for assuming that Rahara had piloted the ship, but then his intuition agreed. Rahara Wick was the one with a personal grudge against Zerka Corporation and deeper empathy for the people under its control. Pax would never have flown into the thick of this. No one could have stopped Rahara from doing so.
Master Jin, said the deep voice of Captain Darren.
Qui-Gon looked back to see the captain approaching them in his flight uniform, guards flanking him on either side.
Thank goodness you're all right. Captain Darren, Qui-Gon said, tell me, did you have to fight Rael Averroes to come here? Or were you able to sneak out?
The shadow of a smile briefly flickered on Darren's face, but it vanished in an instant.
Princess Fanri herself ordered me here, so you two wouldn't be traveling through such dangerous territory alone. When we realized you were in danger, protecting you became our first priority.
So Her Serene Highness was capable of defying her regent when the stakes were important enough. Qui-Gon wondered if that was a sign of maturing wisdom, evidence that Fanri was indeed growing into the queen Pygel needed, or simple adolescent rebellion. Either way, the palace troops' arrival was fortuitous.
We've been working with...
Qui-Gon paused momentarily to find the most prudent way of referring to Pax and Rahara.
Independent pilots who brought us to this location. One of them flew into the fight to try to help us. We're searching for her now.
Darren nodded.
I'll task two of my officers to help you. That would be much appreciated. But we also badly need any scans you have of the Blackguard ships. We've been able to determine that they're not sponsored by Zerka, obviously.
Qui-Gon gestured around at the mayhem, then paused as he saw the refuse area he and Obi-Wan had observed before. Enormous gouges had been scooped out of it by some sort of droid. There was only one thing Zerka was throwing away that the Blackguards could want.
This entire raid may have been no more than an attempt to steal Kolen crystals. Who knows why the opposition does anything?
Darren said, contempt in every syllable. Qui-Gon frowned, ready to object, but then another figure emerged from the forest. Pax Marifer, in an absurdly oversized blue coat.
Where is she? Pax called. Rahara's not back by now, which suggests she sat down here, and as I couldn't fly through this melee...
He waved his arms about in the general direction of the air traffic, even though by now it had largely died down.
I was forced to walk here to fetch her.
Independent pilots,
Qui-Gon said to Darren in a low voice before turning back to Pax.
I'm afraid the facet was down during the fight. Rahara's no longer in the cockpit. We're searching for her.
Pax's face turned pale as he hurried toward the facet, even paler than it usually was.
Were there security droids here? Scanning equipment and people?
When Qui-Gon nodded, Pax stopped in his tracks, fisting his hands in his wild hair as he muttered,
She wasn't tagged any longer. She had her gloves. They didn't get her. They couldn't have.
Captain Darren removed his hat as he might when approaching the loved ones of one who had fallen in combat.
Forgive me, but are you speaking of a Zerka slave dog?
When Pax turned toward him in alarm, the captain hastily added,
No one of this will ever be shared with a Zerka representative. This I swear.
Then yes, that's what I'm speaking of, Pax said.
I regret to inform you that in recent years, Zerka has upgraded most of their scanner droids with facial recognition technology. They have holos on file of every sentient they've ever owned, going back generations.
Darren shook his head sorrowfully.
If this missing person was once owned by Zerka, the security droid probably identified her.
Qui-Gon expected Pax to erupt in fury, to turn on one or both of them, or stalk into the woods without another word. Instead, he simply stood there in the mud, his eyes blank and fearful. Pax resembled nothing so much as a lost child. He didn't move until he spotted something in the mud. Then he knelt and picked up a blue glove, which he folded almost tenderly between both hands. It was a private moment, one Qui-Gon should witness no more of. He turned to Darren.
You're still assuming the Black Guards are affiliated with the opposition. There's no proof of that. Not here or anywhere else.
I know that people who would attack one building would attack another, Darren said. I know that people who resort to violence will continue to be violent. That tells me all I ever need to know about the opposition.
With that, he marched away. Qui-Gon didn't bother calling after him. There was no point in calling someone who would never listen.
Chapter 31.
2 days to the coronation and Fanry had finally gotten nervous.
How about this one? Said the court jeweler, opening yet another antique plain wooden box to reveal a jeweled crown.
Ornate and ostentatious in the extreme, but less so than the first one she tried on. Fanry took the crown in her hands and laid it on her own head.
Now that's lovely, said Zirka Sector Supervisor Merritt Call, who sat with the other ladies of the court to witness the occasion. Don't you think so, Minister Orth?
Minister Orth looked as thrilled as usual, which was to say, not at all.
The first crown is the traditional one for coronation ceremonies. This coronation is going to be different from the others, Fanry said.
Every other Pyjali monarch had been assuming absolute power, without a constitution in sight. As she put the second crown aside, she told the court jeweler,
Something less showy would be better.
The jeweler frowned. Usually showy is the whole point of a crown, even here.
Let me go through the treasury records.
As the jeweler began sorting through the treasury via datapad, someone knocked on the door. To Fanry's surprise, it was Rael Avaros, who said,
Princess, we need to talk.
It has to wait, she called back. I'm not done choosing a crown.
We need to talk now,
he insisted. He was furious. She'd heard him furious many times, but never at her. It shook her more than she would have thought.
For shame, Lord Regent!
Minister Orth bustled to the door, the better to shout through it to Avaros on the other side.
She isn't fit to be seen! How dare you outrage her modesty this way!
Fanry put one hand to her hair, which, unlike every other day of her life until now, fell free instead of being wrapped in a headcloth. Only at maturity did a Pyjali woman put aside the cloths. The coronation would be the first time Fanry had ever shown her red hair to the world.
All right, whatever. If we gotta talk it out like this, we will.
Avaros paused, maybe to catch his breath. It sounded like he might have run all the way from the palace to the treasury.
Fanry, what the hell were you thinking? Sending royal troops to the moon?
From the corner of her eye, Fanry saw Merritt Call stiffen as though she'd been slapped. Apparently the supervisor was well aware that the Jedi didn't care for Zirka's presence on Pyjal. In an even tone, Fanry said only,
Master Jin needed assistance.
Master Jin's the one trying to screw up the treaty, the hyperspace corridor, your coronation, everything we've worked for since I got here.
Fanry sighed. Master Jin is a Jedi sent to help us by the Jedi Council. So, while he's on Pyjal, he's under our protection. It's our duty to make sure that he remains safe. We must do our duty, even when he fails to do his.
Very well said, Your Serene Highness,
Minister Orth drew herself upright, as though Avaros were somehow able to see through the door.
Are we done here, Lord Regent? May the princess return to her task.
Yeah, whatever.
Avaros said no more. Probably he'd go.